Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, what's up? My name is Nolan. I am from Past Gas by Donut Media, the world's number one automotive history show. This week, we're talking about the most famous race in Australia, the Bathurst 1000, the 1,000-kilometer race at the Mount Panorama Circuit. If you know anything about Australian motorsport, even how little, doesn't matter if you know nothing about this race, you probably know about Bathurst. This is the most iconic track down under. It spawned tons of rivalries from Ford versus GM, Peter Brock versus everybody. Everybody versus Nissan, like the list goes on, and we're going to talk about it all. We're going to talk about the origins of the race, the origins of the track itself. A mayor did some fun corruption and had the track built using Great Depression money. It's crazy. Anyway, check it out. That's Past Gas by Donut Media. Anywhere you get your podcasts, follow the show today. Past Gas.
Yes, welcome back to Past Gas. I'm Nolan Sykes. I'm here, as always, with my cohorts, Mr. Joe Weber.
Joe Weber. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to introduce myself or not. And I'm Joe Weber.
Joe Weber and James Pelfrey.
Hi.
Stop. It's so what? Gross.
I just have a dry mouth.
Oh, God. Oh. Okay, so today on the show, we are starting our two-part series. Two-part?
I mean, it depends on how Kanan wants to cut it, but I think it's two-part.
All right, two-part series.
Yeah, unless he comes back from the dead.
Ooh.
Then we'll do a third part for sure. Yeah.
That would be pretty awesome.
Spoiler alert.
Our subject today is one of the most legendary Americans ever, Mr. Evel Knievel.
Oh, it's pronounced evil?
What did you think it was?
I've been saying Avow this whole time, yeah.
Past Gas Podcast, it's about cars, it's not about sports.
Hey guys, welcome to the Past Gas Podcast. If you like Past Gas, please help us grow by giving us a good rating and a nice review on the podcast platform of your choice. It'll really help us out, and I really appreciate that, so thank you. All right, now for the show.
Avel Knievel?
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, Avel Knievel.
I don't know why you would think that.
Avel Knievel is a daredevil who's like French and does like tightropes and stuff.
Yeah.
But no, Evel Knievel, no introduction. Unless you need that, and we're going to give you all the introduction.
Good thing.
He flew over buses, fountains, and rattlesnakes. But did you know he was also a ski jump champion?
I did not.
Evel Knievel is one of the most iconic names of the 20th century. There's a reason that people are still being compared to him nearly 40 years after his last jump. He rubbed elbows with Hollywood's greatest, performed stunts no one thought were possible, and pioneered a whole subsect of stunting known as action sports, which has blossomed into a multi-billion dollar industry. Pretty much all of my favorite people of my childhood owe their career to Evel Knievel.
Yeah, I think we should preface this by saying most of our sources were just documentaries because there's a million documentaries on him. The biggest one being Being Evil, mm-hmm. By Dick House Productions, who did Jackass. It's a really good documentary. You should go check it out after this.
Absolutely. I watched it last night. It is really good. Check it out on Tubi or wherever you can find it. All right, so Knievel performed over 75 motorcycle jumps over his career, most of which were successful. Some were catastrophically unsuccessful. Many were on bikes that weighed close to 500 pounds, mostly Harley Davidsons.
Yeah, he loved Harley. He had a Triumph Bonneville.
Mm-hmm.
He actually started selling Honda motorcycles, which we'll get into. But I think that's crazy because... Jeremiah is our motorcycle mm-hmm. rider, and he was like, yeah, it's like motocross people jump bikes that are like 200-220 pounds.
That's
to think
crazy.
That he's jumping a bike that's 300 pounds more than that.
Yeah.
What's an animal that weighs 500 pounds?
A gorilla.
That's like jumping
a gorilla. So these motorcycles, they're flat track bikes that were not designed to jump, as Joe said. He also broke many, many bones in his body and spent a lot of time in the hospital. And against all odds, he lived to 69 years old. Nice.
Nice. Nice.
Perhaps more impressive than his death-defying stunts was Evil's ability to act as his own promoter, hype man, and publicist. He knew how to pump up the drama and get the crowd on their feet. I think that's my favorite part of the documentary. I didn't know that Evil was... He's like a handsome guy.
He's super handsome. You know? And just so confident, like oozing confidence in every interview he does.
I guess it makes sense that he was so good at that because, I mean, I think if you have the mindset of like, hey, I'm going to jump over 13 buses or whatever, you also have the confidence of being like, I'm going to tell people to watch my stuff. But like, I don't know, like you talk to like race car drivers today, they're definitely, there's only like a few that are
Yeah, there's
like,
only a few that can talk at all.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because they're all just like nerds who are best friends with their dad.
So it was very interesting seeing Mr. Knievel in action.
Green Anaconda, by the way, 500 pounds.
Wow.
Which surprised me more.
That's a big snake.
That's a big snake.
Just a big meat tube. Evil's charisma inspired a new generation of stunt people around the world. He was a natural showman, a con artist, and outlaw. But he wasn't always evil. He was born Robert Craig Knievel on October 13th, 1938, in Butte, Montana. Butte at the time was a small, rough town known for two things, mines full of copper and bars full of miners. Robert's parents, Robert Sr. and Ann Knievel, gave birth to his brother Nick a year later. Then they divorced soon after. His mother moved to Reno, and his father moved to California, leaving Robert and Nick in the hands of their grandparents. Dang.
So I was reading up more on Butte, and there was like 30,000 people in the town, but there were 3,000 prostitutes.
Whoa.
To like serve all the miners. So like literally 1/10 of the population was prostitutes.
That means 10 guys were doing it with the same gal.
Well... Ignatius and Emma Knievel, his grandparents, showered the kids with love and affection, filling in a much-needed Ignatius. It's a crazy...
We have an Ignatius at Donut.
No, we have an Ignacio.
Yeah, but like...
That's kind of the same, right?
Yeah, is it?
Yeah.
His grandparents bought the boys bicycles and toys and took them to fairs. When Robert was 8, Ignatius and Emma took him and his brother to a Daredevil show that would forever change his life from that point on. The Joey Chitwood Thrill Show was a traveling extravaganza.
Sounds like a rockabilly band.
The Joey Chitwood Thrill Show.
They got the freaking
Joey Chitwood Thrill Show.
Yeah.
It's playing at the fair.
I'm surprised he didn't have his own signature PT Cruiser. So this extravaganza that featured stunt driver Joey Chitwood doing J-turns and driving on two wheels and what amounted to be a giant commercial for Chevrolet. What really interested young Knievel was the motorcycle stunts. Riders would smash through flaming boards at high speeds, they'd do wheelies, and jump through flaming hoops. This show sparked something in Robert. In his words,
I would go home, take the fenders off my bicycle, and put clothespins in cards so it'd sound like a motorcycle.
That was the start of his lifelong obsession with motorcycles and danger.
Damn.
Did you guys used to do that when you were kids?
Oh, yeah.
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 I used to live next to the dump. And I mean, my parents still live next to the dump, but we used to go down.
Where do you live? Right by the dump.
We used to hop the fence, and there was a whole section where they would bring old broken bicycles.
Oh, wow.
And a lot of them were like just had flat tires and stuff. So we'd throw them over the fence and fix them up. But I found a Schwinn Thrasher.
Schwinn, that's hard to say.
Schwinn Thrasher, okay. Which was like an old black BMX bike with gold trim. Mm-hmm. And it was so sick. And I had it for like a week, and then someone stole it out of my backyard. I've had 4 bikes stolen from my backyard.
I had my bike stolen once when I was a kid. I had like left it in my front yard and didn't really think of anything of it. And when we came back from dinner, I was like, my bike's gone. What the heck? And then...
What the heck?
What the heck?
He said, how? Nolan, I shouldn't swear like that.
Who could have predicted this? But then this neighbor kid from down the street, his name was Austin. He like came back with my bike and he's like, yeah, like my mom like found your bike in my laundry room.
Okay.
He's like, don't know how it got there.
I don't
there.
Know how it got there. Yeah. I don't know where Austin is now. I hope he's not in jail.
Me too. Well, if he kept up that poor behavior, I bet that's right where he is.
Yeah.
Also, Austin, if you're listening, we hope you're good.
I hope
bud.
You're okay, man.
He's
seriously.
Probably like a finance bro right now.
Yeah. He's like, don't worry, bud. I am good.
Yeah. I own a house now. Yeah.
He's drinking champagne.
Oh,
in
you're
in
renting?
A hot tub.
You're yeah. renting? I own a house now, bro. Yeah. Okay.
Just watching the podcast, our podcast. Eating YouTube flaming. Channel
on his
on
Google
like,
Glass.
Yeah, he's got future glasses that we've never seen before. Don't worry, bud. I am good.
Somewhat related neighborhood kid story. There's this other kid named Ruben.
Love that sandwich.
Yeah, great, sandwich, great sandwich inventor. I bought a pogo stick from him.
How much?
For like $5-$10
That's
or whatever.
A good
yeah,
deal.
Good deal. Because he was like, "Yeah, I'm selling my pogo stick. I want to buy a kitten or something." And we're like, "All right, cool." So I bought it, and then like,
what a like fanciful yeah. land Nolan grew up in.
Well,
I gave him money for a pogo stick so he could get a kitten.
And then he came back like 2 days later. He's like, I have to buy back the pogo stick from you. And we're like, why? And he's like, my dad was mad that I used the money to buy nachos.
Yeah, anyway. Did he think he was going to be able to buy a kitten for $5?
Also, who buys cats? Cats just show up and then you have them for like 15 years. That's how you get cats. If you spend money on a cat, you're an idiot. They're free. They're free. Cats are free.
Cats are free.
Okay, so
we'll get back to more Past Gas, but right now, a word from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Back to Eva Kaliva. Robert, he found an old garage door, set it up against a washing machine, and started launching his bike off of it, with him on it, I would assume. Him and his bike, he would light up the ground on fire and jump over the flames. Eventually, he found another garage door and set it up as the landing ramp. When Knievel was 13, he stole his first motorcycle, a Harley Davidson. He liked to ride the bike fast and recklessly, jumping off of whatever he could, doing wheelies up and down the streets of Butte, Montana.
Like a 13-year-old, like you can tell they're not a grown-up.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're a kid.
What's that small boy doing on that motorcycle?
Whoa, that kid just did a wheelie on that Harley.
Yeah. I don't even think I'd be mad.
No, like, I'd be like, yeah!
Yeah, that's sick. And this is Butte, so yeah. Like they've never seen shit like this.
They've never seen anything.
Yeah,
they don't even have TV.
That's amazing.
Really funny thing that happened real quick. When he first came to Hollywood, this will come later, he was doing wheelies up and down the street and in front of a bar that all these sportscasters went to.
Yeah.
on like Ventura. And they all came out and watched him do wheelies. And they were like, yeah, that was the first time I'd even heard the word wheelie or knew what a wheelie was, and he was just doing
That's
it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
My grandma was a flight attendant and like in the 40s, and she was like, yeah, I didn't know what pizza was till I was like 25. And we were in Italy.
Did she like it when she had
it? She was like, yeah, it's great. Like, yep. Some pilot was like, we're gonna go get pizza, and her and her friend were like, what's pizza? What is
she
that?
She puts on her helmet.
That's crazy.
The point is, like, people back in the olden days, like, just didn't know. Yeah. Like, nowadays we're pretty aware of almost everything.
Yeah, the internet makes it so easy for us to just know everything.
Yeah, but back then people were like, a wheelie, you say? Well, I guess that makes sense. He is on one.
he would also get the police to chase him, and he would outrun them every time. One time he was showing off for friends, and then he crashed into his neighbor's garage and started a fire. But after a couple of years of thrashing his Harley around, by the way, not his Harley, he stole it, of thrashing the Harley around, his grandma replaced the bike with a Triumph.
His grandma?
His grandma.
Cool, his grandma who's raising him.
That's cool.
Yeah, his grandma was really nice. His grandpa was really nice too. Helped him out with like money once in a while. But I think one weird thing that was in this documentary was the people of Butte. Sorry, I always want to say Butte. The people of Butte, it was kind of like a Western kind of uncivilized town. And so they believed in like, not law, but like, solving it, like settling things
Street
like a man
justice.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so they knew that he was doing this like shitty thing, like stealing a motorcycle and riding around town doing wheelies, but it didn't bother them that much. And it was like everyone knew each other. And so it was kind of this weird, like no one cared that he was breaking all these laws kind of thing.
Wasn't hurting nobody.
That's chill.
He's just doing wheelies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, stealing motorcycles, too.
Well, yeah, but he probably gave it back at some point, right?
Mm.
Okay. when he wasn't riding motorcycles, young Robert, now going by Bob, got his thrills from throwing rocks at prostitutes and running away when their pimps chased him. Cool guy. I mean, that's a hard job already, and then he's just making it harder by throwing rocks at people.
Yeah, what's his problem?
Like most high schoolers, he hated going to school because it got in the way of him riding his motorcycle. He dropped out sophomore year and got a job at the Anaconda Mining Company operating a drill. But that was too boring for him. So he was moved to service duty where he got to drive an earth mover around. He must have gotten pretty bored with that as well, because one day at work, he did a wheelie in his earth mover and drove it straight into a high voltage power line, severing the wires and cutting off power to the entire city of Butte.
This guy's just like the town terror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was fired on the spot, but that was okay with him because anything other than riding a motorcycle was considered unimportant stuff. Knievel didn't need a boss telling him what to do. He learned pretty quickly how to use his natural charm to manipulate people. He started offering to help guard local businesses overnight for some money on the side. Bob acted as a private security guard, making sure no one broke into these stores. But if shops didn't want to pay him, he would break into them himself and loot whatever he could. This was just one of the many rackets Knievel had going on. He was also known as a great safe cracker, card cheat, and stick up kid.
It means he stuck up people and he was a kid.
Whoa.
It doesn't mean that he was stuck up.
No, it means he sticks them up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, he was the opposite of stuck up.
This life of crime eventually got him arrested. I'm not surprised. While in the clink.
Yeah, there's only like 8 people in his town.
Well, I mean, you said there's 30,000 people at the time.
But that's a small town.
I mean, that's bigger than Atascadero, though. I was imagining like where I grew up. Sorry, my hometown of Atascadero. I was imagining like a 500 people town. But
I grew up, my city of Shorewood, Wisconsin had 17,000 people.
Whoa.
And I feel like I knew most everyone in town.
While in the clink, Bob shared a cell with another local criminal, William Knoefel.
Knoefel. That's very important that you pronounce it.
All right. William Knoefel, a cop on night duty, saw the two and said offhandedly, "Oh, great. We got Awful Knoefel and Evil Knievel," and the name stuck.
I think that's so cool.
That's so cool.
Awful Knoefel, Evil Knievel.
That's like, you ever have those relatives where you're like, oh, you're so fucking funny. Like, you should be a writer.
Yeah.
Like, and they just like come up with great things on the spot and they're like, oh no.
Like that cop should have written for The Office.
Yeah.
Bob later changed it to E-V-E-L because he didn't want to be perceived as a bad guy.
But he was a bad guy. Let's make that clear.
Yeah.
By the late 50s, crime wasn't looking like a sustainable career for Evil. Everyone in the small town knew him, and there was no one left to swindle.
I done swindled everybody.
So he joined the army. One thing you should know about Evil Knievel is that he was athletically gifted. At Butte High School, he was proficient in track and field, ice hockey, and ski jumping. Now in the army, Evil excelled on the army team, particularly in the pole jump. When it came time for him to choose a path within the army, he chose to become a paratrooper, making over 30 successful jumps, which goes to show, Evil was a thrill seeker, through and through. After he got out of the army, he found himself chasing that adrenaline rush now more than ever. He participated in local rodeos, motorcycle races, and ski jump competitions. He even won the Northern Rocky Mountain Ski Association Class A Men's Ski Jumping Championship in 1959. Ski jumping is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only imagine that back then he was even more insane because they probably didn't have all the safety equipment that they do now.
Yeah, you like know? Braces and stuff.
Yeah, like good helmets.
Yeah, they probably didn't wear helmets at all.
Probably not.
I like those speed skiing helmets that are like cones off the back.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Those are sick. Alpine skiers are so sick.
God. Yeah, they're like action figures.
Yeah, Bodie Miller and who's the one chick that was like... What I love about like Olympic athletes is that you forget their names, but every like 4 years you're like, oh yeah, dude, freaking Apollo Anton Ono.
I was gonna say
that's my guy, dude.
His little soul patch.
Yeah, oh. That guy was so cool. at one point, Evil played semi-pro hockey.
What is this guy?
Right?
He's like a robber and an awesome athlete.
He's handsome.
Handsome and cool at motorcycles.
Yeah.
And he's from Butte.
I think I'm going to play like semi-professional hockey now. I don't know.
I mean, where do you go from the Northern Rocky Mountain Association
ski jumping competition?
So he was playing semi-pro hockey with the Charlotte Checkers. His teammates said he was a decent athlete, but one of the biggest bullshitters, and he always had to be the center of attention, even if it meant getting into more fights than the other players. When he was 19.
He's only 19?
He's 19 at this point.
What?
He moved back to Montana and used the money from a local car dealership and his grandpa to start a semi-professional hockey team of his own called the Butte Bombers. He was the owner, coach, and starting center. So you're just like in Butte, and maybe you're like, yeah, I played some hockey back in the day. I'm going to join this team. And then your coach is like a 19-year-old kid.
Yeah, but and the owner.
And he's also
He's like, you're like negotiating a salary with this kid.
Yeah. Ever the opportunist, Evil convinced the Czechoslovakian men's Olympic hockey team to come play the Bombers as a warm-up for the 1960 Olympics. He packed the 2,000-seat arena, and the Bombers proceeded to get pummeled by the gold medal contenders. By the end of the first period, he came out and pleaded with the audience to donate money since they didn't make enough to pay the Czech team for travel costs. Then, after the bucket was passed around, Evil dipped out with the money. The Czechs were pissed, and the U.S. Olympic Committee had to pay them to avoid an international incident.
So, yeah, this Czechoslovakian team comes over, and they beat them 22-3.
At least they got three goals. That's pretty impressive.
Well, I think at a certain point, they were like, we're just going to ease off. And some of the other members of the Butte Bombers were saying that, like, they were just messing with them at that point, and they could have scored 100-0 kind of thing.
They should have.
They were probably doing like Harlem Globetrotters type shit.
Yeah.
Juggling the puck on their sticks going down the ice. Check this out. Around this time, Evil met his soon-to-be wife, Linda Joan Bork. This woman, she's a saint. For the mere fact that she put up with Evil's bullshit for so long, if there were any red flags that might have tipped her off that Evil wasn't the most chivalrous guy, the way that he proposed was telling her, "You're gonna marry me." She openly admits in the documentary, being Evil, that it felt like she was gonna get kidnapped the day they got married. Linda was walking down the street, and he pulled up in her car, or pulled up in his car rather, and drove her to the church to get married. And she felt like she didn't have a choice.
Oh, God.
So, cool again. Cool guy again. And that wasn't the first time he had kidnapped her. He was formally charged with kidnapping a few years earlier and basically doing the same thing.
Yeah, they left that part out of the documentary. They kind of made it seem a little bit romantic, yeah. Where she was like, yeah, it was kind of weird, but, like, I love the guy. And then I look, and, like, 6 years earlier, he, like, actually kidnapped her.
Yeah, I remember having, like, I feel like right now we're just blowing so many people's ideal or, like, image of Evel Knievel up. Like, I remember feeling that when I watched the documentary, like, oh, he was a huge piece of shit. Mm-hmm. Like, that cool guy who jumped over buses and stuff that you liked when you were a kid. It's like, oh, man, this guy is just, like, such a bad guy.
And I think, like, in our situations, that dude that we knew became, like, he started working at Jack in the Box by the time he was 25. But he just kept succeeding and was just, like, so reckless and just, like, threw caution to the wind at every turn. And somehow it worked out for him.
He just kept winning.
Yeah.
Honestly, man, it's just, like, sheer power of will can, like, get you so far.
He, like, manifested all this success.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we learned in, like, you know, with our Fordlandia episode. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it was a horrible idea, but, like,
but just, like,
just that arrogance.
And ruthlessness,
ruthless arrogance,
just, like, what the thing, like, my happiness means more than anybody else's.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
A few years down the road and three children deep, Evil found himself facing a tough decision. He had been racing motocross professionally, but it wasn't enough to support his growing family. Plus, he had just broken his collarbone in a race, and the doctor told him he couldn't race for 6 months. He used his hunting and fishing skills to start SureKill Guide Services, promising clients only the biggest and most impressive trophy kills. Like most things Evil did, this venture was wildly successful, but was shut down when the game wardens realized he was taking people into Yellowstone National Park to hunt.
This guy's a cartoon.
This guy's insane.
He doesn't care about anything.
Nothing. Hey, all this land, all these animals, might as well hunt them.
Maybe it was because he respected wildlife, or maybe he had money signs in his eyes, but Evel Knievel traveled to Washington, D.C. to protest the culling of elk in Yellowstone Park. The practice of slaughtering huge numbers of elk was done at the national park, to thin numbers and give the rest of the herd a better chance of survival. Knievel thought that the elk should be transported to legal hunting areas, and he hitchhiked all the way to the nation's capital with a pair of 30-inch elk antlers to deliver the petition and 3,000 signatures.
No, he's like a lobbyist.
Yeah.
But I think it was just because he was like, all those good elk, they could be making me money. Yeah. Put them on the other side of the fence.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you ain't going to let me, you killing them anyway.
It's got a fair point.
Evil was passionate about many things, but none of them paid the bills. So in 1962, at the age of 24 now, he decided to knuckle down and get a real job.
He's still only 24 years old.
And that's when he started selling insurance at the Combined Insurance Company of America. The owner of the company, W. Clement Stone, was also a self-help personality and suggested that Evil read a book that he wrote called Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude. And this book completely changed how Knievel thought.
This dude's a character, too. There's some weird archival footage of him, and he's got, like, a dolly mustache. And he's like, success is based off of your mental attitude. Yeah. And he's like,
I feel fantastic. Yeah. It's so weird.
Weird ass dude.
Evil brought the same level of intensity to selling insurance that he did to stunting. He was a gifted and charismatic salesman. One day, he went to a local mental hospital and walked from room to room selling insurance to mental patients. He ended up selling 110 policies that day and 271 of them for the week, breaking a national record for the company. But when he went to W. Clement Stone and demanded that he be made vice president, Stone, for some reason, denied him. This ticked off Knievel, so he moved to Moses Lake, Washington, and started selling Honda motorcycles. Business wasn't as booming as it was when he was selling insurance, though, so he started looking for ways to perk up interest in his business. That's when he had the idea to do a motorcycle jump. So he rounded up two mountain lions and a refrigerator box full of rattlesnakes.
That's so many rattlesnakes.
That's a lot of rattlesnakes. And put ramps on either end. In front of a small crowd that he had gathered, Evil got up to speed on his 305cc Honda Scrambler and launched off the ramp. He didn't get close to clearing the 40-foot gap, but instead came down on the edge of the refrigerator box, flipping up angry rattlesnakes into the crowd and sending people running for their lives.
Wait, so it was like...
Like he cased it and that just launched snakes out of the box.
But I think he rolled away. So he just clipped probably the side of the board or side of the box, missed the ramp, and then just rolled away. Because under his list of jumps, it lists this one as being successful. I don't know what their definition of success is, but...
That's pretty amazing. After Evil saw how much attention he got from the jump, he decided to take his talent to Hollywood and start a stunt show. Evil Knievel and his motorcycle daredevils featured stunts like high-speed wheelies, the classic flaming gauntlet, and a dwarf named Butch Wilhelm that would perform a smaller version of whatever stunt Evil was doing in the finale. He would dress up in the same costume as Evil and purposely failed the stunt. And this got the crowd even more nervous for the main attraction, Evil's Jump.
Evil's Jump.
This was the first time in the documentary where I was like, oh... Jackass is just trying to be Evil Knievel.
Yeah. Wee Man is super into cars. He has like a dope freaking Impala.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And he's like a van life dude.
Yeah, he lives in a van now.
Yeah.
Like, that's like a hip thing now to do.
Yeah, where does he keep his car?
I don't know. I mean, in LA, we have like tons of businesses that are basically just like, hey, rich guys, park your cars here.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Wish I could park my car there, you know?
I need a place to park a car.
Yeah, you have the office right now.
Yeah, I have a car parked in our office. I didn't even know nobody liked it until 2 weeks ago.
Max loves it.
Yeah, Max thinks it's really cool. I still think it makes sense because, you know, we're a car.
Yeah, I think we should have some cars in there, and that's like a really cool, clean one.
But it does, I mean, it takes up like the entire hallway.
Well, it's supposed to be in the lobby, but everyone moved it into the hallway. Because there's another car in the lobby.
He took his show on the road, stopping at cities like Barstow, California.
Ooh.
Yeah. Tacoma, Washington, and Missoula, Montana.
Ooh.
Many of these early jumps were very sketchy because the team had still not figured out an airtight way of calculating things like speed, launch angle, and distance. So they didn't know how to do...
Geometry.
Yeah.
Listen up, kids. If you're in high school, you're thinking... When will I ever need this? Well, if you plan on doing motorcycle jumps, you better learn geometry.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts of this documentary was like, they interview his friend who's like, yeah, he just had me like stand at the ramp and say like fast enough or not fast enough.
Everything was guesswork because no one had actually really done this before. And Evil wasn't the kind of guy to bring in math experts, nerds, to figure out the optimal speed and launch angle. No, Evil relied on his friend standing next to the ramp to tell him if he was going fast enough. Yeah. Can't rely on these nerds to tell me how fast to go. I'm going to do it by feel and then just totally f***ing crash. Yeah.
Oh, they're so boring.
What if somebody sees me with them?
Oh, well.
Ow! If you want to... Ow! When you throw caution to the wind, bad luck usually catches up to you eventually. One of Evil's first serious crashes happened on June 19th, 1966 in Missoula when he was attempting to jump 13 cars. He had just landed his first successful jump.
He can't even jump a freaking...
A refrigerator box?
Yeah, I can't jump a refrigerator box.
A refrigerator box? What is
it? We're all having strokes today.
He had just landed in his first successful jump over 12 cars in Post Falls, Idaho, only 2 weeks earlier, and felt confident adding another car's length to the jump probably wouldn't be a big deal. Evil revved up his Norton 750 Atlas and ripped down the runway, took off. It was obvious from the jump that he didn't have the speed to clear all 13 cars. He and his 400-pound Norton came crashing down violently. Knievel broke his ribs, his arm, and was knocked unconscious. But the 5 months of recovery didn't deter Evil Knievel. Each time he moved on to a new city, the jump seemed to get bigger. When he heard that ABC's Wide World of Sports was going to be covering a dirt track motorcycle race in Gardena, California, he saw an opportunity to become world famous.
That's the whole, like, I really respect. He took his, like, con artist skills and looking for every, like, every way he could get over on someone. And it translated really well to
business.
Business, and especially this kind of business.
Weird how, like, that works, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, business is just like being shitty.
Oh, psychopaths are really good at business?
I worked for a guy who was like, yeah, man, business is just a shell game. You're just moving money around to just cover your bases until someone else comes knocking. I'm just like, that doesn't sound like a very good business plan, dude.
So anyways, you want to invest in
mine? Yeah, I was like, yes, I'll work for you. One of the best jobs ever. Wide World of Sports was an extremely popular television program that showcased different sports from around the world. It was the only TV show that you could see things like rodeo and skateboarding, sumo wrestling, and highlight.
Highlight's gnarly, yeah. Dude.
It's so gnarly.
Yeah. Speaking of, have you seen that Jackass video?
No.
With the oranges?
Yeah, they shoot each other in the butts with oranges.
With, like, these highlight hooks, and it gets up to, like, 100 miles an hour, and they're just, fast. Like, shooting Ryan Dunn in the ass with oranges.
Ow. Evil was able to sweet-talk the organizer of the race into letting him do some of the jumps before the race. The stage was set. Evil appeared confident and charismatic in the pre-jump interview, telling the host, I'm not going to miss today. And he didn't.
Nice.
Yeah. In his first televised jump, Evil Knievel successfully jumped 15 cars on his Triumph Bonneville T120, a bike weighing 363 pounds. The race that happened that day was the biggest and most anticipated dirt track motorcycle race in the world, but it was completely overshadowed by Evil's jump. The event catapulted him from being a local legend to a household name across America. Fame was what he wanted. But the big question was, how would it change him?
Hopefully for the better.
Yeah, I think, you know... In
I mean,
experience.
People usually get nicer when they become really famous, right?
So
easier to deal with.
Yeah. So we'll find that out next week on Past Gas. We're going to talk about how he absolutely destroyed his body, why he fought the Hell's Angels, and we'll see the full transformation from Robert Knievel to Evil. Knievel.
Wow. Yeah. What a guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's an insane first half of your life. I mean, first, like, 20 years of your life.
It's crazy. Do you guys have anything to plug? Because I do, and Joe does as well. Next week, next Wednesday, January 22nd, Joe and I will be in the Belly Room at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles. I'm super excited for this. Please come out and support your boys. Tell them that you're here at the Belly Room to see us so we get invited again.
We want to do it.
Yeah, that'll be really fun. Yeah, just come watch your boys do some stand-up comedy. I think it'll be really great. So that's next Wednesday, January 22nd, at the Comedy Store in LA in the Belly Room. We have a second YouTube channel where we host the full video of these podcasts. It's called Donut Podcasts. So check that out, subscribe, hit that notification bell, and keep listening and give us some good reviews on the platform of your choice. It really helps us out. Follow James on Instagram and Twitter at
James Pumphrey.
Follow Joe on Instagram and Twitter at
Dark_webinar.
Makes me laugh every time. And follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Nolan J. Sykes. And follow Donut at Donut Media. Thanks for listening.
I love you.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.